Welcome to the Rogue Tailboard Podcast, where firemen are fired up and minimal is unacceptable.
Hey, Chris. Doing well. How you doing?
Not too bad. Just leading up to this, just a bunch of chaoticness on a good old regular Tuesday.
Hey, man. I mean, that is life. Yes, sir. Sorry it's taking a while for us to hook up. I mean, I had some stuff come up on my end, too.
Hey, no problem. That's the thing about it. You know, sure, we have fun and we do. We get to have our friends on and hear their different stories. But I like the fact that we're all still fired. We all still have lives. Mm-hmm. All kinds of unexpected curveballs that happens. So it's not like rainbows and unicorns all day, every day. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Priorities. Family will always come first and the job, you know. So this, like you said, this is fun time. So
it is. And that's why I continue to admit I can hear you good. Okay. Yeah, your connection's pretty good. So well, brother, again, just thank you for coming on. This is just two dudes talking life. That's what I usually like to say about it. No or anything really to it. It's just good stories, good victory stories to guys in the fire service that understand, like we just said, life happens. Sometimes a lot of negativity can happen all at once in an overwhelming manner if you don't have a good rock or foundation or even close guys that you can talk to get you through that. It can be very challenging to do on your own. It takes a very strong-willed person to do that solo. And we know that.
That's right.
For me, I'm being alone. So I try and look for those like you that have had these victory stories. And I know we'll get into all that. But let's hear what life was like for Josh growing up. You know, is it Josh or Joshua? What do you prefer?
Josh is good, man. Josh is good. But again, I appreciate you just asking me because, you know, I definitely, if my life experiences can help somebody get through adversity or hardship, then, you know, I'm grateful for that. And I feel like that is why God has allowed me to, you know, make it through the other end, through these adversities, as unscathed and as I have been. Is so that I can be of service and of use to others. So, my early childhood was pretty normal, pretty charmed. In fact, you know, I had a good family, solid, stable household. There was some, just some tumultuous times between my parents, but in terms of dysfunction, every family's got some level of dysfunction, and my parents had the foresight to include counselors, you know, to help them and my brother and I work through issues. We were definitely involved in church from an early age. That I think that was where my biggest struggles began in terms of my faith was the church and the school that my brother and I had been enrolled in. It was really, they called themselves like Pentecostal, but I think it was more cult-like than that. They were very abusive, and my brother and I both had suffered some physical and sexual abuses at the hands of those people early on. And I remember just kind of being removed from that environment completely, my parents disassociating from that group of people, like almost overnight. Like these people had a almost daily role. Well, in a lot of ways, it was a daily role in our lives because it was a school, but these people were just gone from our life overnight. You know what I mean? And we just didn't talk about a lot of that. So really just kind of out of sight, out of mind. After a while, we just changed gears and went to a different school, changed churches. But at that point, I just kind of checked out on the whole God thing. You know, it was just, And, you know, as a, at least for me, you know, my immature mind, you know, I was like, well, there can't be a God if he allows these kind of, you know, things to happen. And if he is, I don't want anything to do with him. So, so that really framed a lot of how I lived my life and the choices I made. But otherwise, you know, I was a pretty chill kid. My parents expected my brother and I to perform well in school, you know, maintain jobs once we reached, you know, driving age, and then extracurricular sports, et cetera, activities. So pretty well-rounded, you know. You know, that alcoholism was a thing in both sides of my family. That, again, one of those things that just, one of those uncomfortable truths that wasn't really talked about. But anytime I showed interest in it, there was a huge overreaction, which I thought was an overreaction, but my parents' reaction was justified. I just didn't know why at the time, you know? So I didn't really party or go, you know, do any of that during high school. My brother was almost 7 years older than me. He, his birthday is March 11th. Mine's the 10th, but he, went off to college before I did. And I got to see him and his mistake made, et cetera, that ultimately led to him enlisting. And, after a while, I was just sort of like an only child and left to my own devices. So my parents kind of pushed me to pursue the college route, but I had always kind of had this pull to enlist. I, you know, I wanted to kind of follow my brother, and my dad had also been in the military. So I had this, I don't know, just this desire to serve, be of service. And they really discouraged that. And I was kind of pushed in a different direction, again, more academic direction. So I went off to college and farted around and eventually graduated. And then I got accepted to law school. Again, this was like right after 9/11. And I had a lot of buddies from college who were either enlisting for the first time or going back. And again, that pull, that desire to go and be a part of something greater than myself took hold. But again, I just kind of took the easy route that my parents were kind of, I felt guided to do. But I guess rewind a little bit. And once I hit college, that's when my drinking career really took off. And I was way more focused on, you know, partying than I was academics at the time. But I still managed to somehow get through and, you know, pulled out my grades and met all their expectations, et cetera. So I think because I saw myself as functioning, that only just kind of affirmed what I was doing. And in my mind, you know, it was okay. Hadn't become an issue, right?
Right.
So all those things had really taken deep root in me, unbeknownst to me. But time passes, I go to law school, and the partying, you know, picks up even more. I think I probably partied more in law school than I did in college, and was still somehow able to manage to get through all that. And it was around that time my mom had been diagnosed with an illness that was eventually going to be terminal. And again, you know, our family, we just didn't discuss uncomfortable truths. We just kind of brushed stuff under the rug and acted like everything. We put on a happy face, and because that was what the expectation was. And so I was in communication with my brother, who at the time was stationed abroad. And, you know, he was desperate for information on what was going on with mom. I didn't know what to tell him. So we had some distance, I guess, as a result of that. He just didn't. And looking back, I have a lot of regrets on, you know, that my lack of communication with him and lack of effort I put in. But at the time, I was worried about me, super selfish, super self, you know, seeking, short-term gratification kind of guy, you know? And, I graduated law school and my brother flew home from, where was he at the time? Italy, to see me graduate, which was really cool. But he got to see the entire family at that time. 1 month later to the day, he and his family were killed in a car accident in Italy. And, you know, it was it. We never saw him, heard from him again. His at the time, 3-year-old son, one of their boys survived the accident, thank God. But that was the first time our family, like our direct family, immediate family, I guess, uncles, grandfathers, grandparents, et cetera, any of us had experienced any sort of like shock and unexpected loss like that. Yeah. And nobody knew how to deal with it. And nobody handled it well, I guess. And I certainly didn't. Because that pain that I was feeling, I just didn't want to feel it. So the only thing I knew that would numb it was drinking, you know? I grabbed anything and everything I thought I could to just not feel. And that just became kind of my daily life at that point. And my mom kind of took a similar approach, but unfortunately, given her medical condition, that kind of sped up the clock for her. And she ended up passing away, I think, almost 3 years exactly after Michael passed. So at that point, it was just me and my dad. And through all that loss, though, you know, it kind of forced he and I to turn to each other, and our relationship grew. But all the time, all the while, I guess, I was still just really drinking quite heavily. And, you know, still maintaining my career as a lawyer, but I wasn't happy, super unhappy. I never felt a sense of fulfillment in that pursuit. And I just had this lingering regret that I felt like I'd made the wrong choice in terms of my career. But during that time, I don't think I was making any good choices, you know, personally, professionally, or otherwise, because I just, again, was just kind of living in a haze and just going through the motions every day. And the drinking did start to affect my life, and that mainly was just my relationships. I didn't really have any good relationships. I was, again, very selfish, very self-centered, focused on my, you know, me, what can you do for me kind of deal. And the relationships I did have were superficial at best. I was married at the time, and that was sort of a impulsive decision, didn't really know each other that well, and dysfunctional. Of course, you know, I don't blame anything on anyone other than myself, you know, my own dysfunction, but it just was a super unhealthy relationship. And and that's when things just kind of started spiraling out of control for me. And there was the first time in my life that I actually had, you know, issues, consequences starting to, you know, come about as a result of my drinking. And that was when I just started considering the possibility that I might have a problem. And that still didn't help me in getting sober, though, because it took more than, because like to that point, you know, I'd been a high achieving individual, you know. I had been taught, I mean, my dad indoctrinated in me or inculcated into me a sense of independence, you know, be your own man, you know, earn what you get, you know, anything that you can't control or outside of your control is weakness, essentially. You know, I believe that if I were to accept that there was a part of my life that I had no control over, that that was an admission of weakness, if that makes sense.
It does.
And that was the hardest part for me. And I think that's what took the longest for me to eventually just come around to accept that it had become an issue for me. And I can remember the day, God, I hate to admit it, but I mean, it was a lot of years, man. In April, I'll be sober 4 years, but God willing, I make it to, you know, my date in April. I just had this moment, a God moment, if you will, of desperation that I could finally see it as a thief. I had let it steal so much from me. I'm not talking about money and physical things. I'd let it steal relationships and time. And I refuse to let it take any more from me, if that makes sense.
Right.
So I made a lot of changes. I finally surrendered, if you will, to that. I mean, I accepted that it was an issue that was too great for me. I could not do it on my own. So that is how I came to, I guess, reestablish my faith in God, because I can't do this on my own. This is something that's too big for me. So I had to give it up to Him, and I have to help others, because I've been granted a gift of sobriety, and in order to keep my life that I have now and maintain my sobriety, I have to give it away and help others. And that, I think, is what informed my decision to leave the practice of law, because again, I'd always just seen it as a selfish pursuit, either for myself or for my clients. And I was like, you know, there's enough.
Was there a certain law you were practicing as a lawyer?
Yeah. Sorry. Corporate commercial litigation. So, I mean, I represented banks, man.
I know there's a lot of different avenues. I just didn't know which I chose.
Yeah. No, I represented banks mostly. So, okay. I was pretty good at it. And I had carved a niche in breaking up class actions. So these clients, you know, would break the law, essentially, and they'd get, you know, other attorneys would find enough victims, for lack of a better word, to form a class action, break it up and defeat their case. So,
I got you.
But, you know, again, I'd got no sense of satisfaction or worth out of that, you know. It just wasn't rewarding to me in my spirit. So once I started down my journey through sobriety, I knew that that wasn't something that I wanted to stay in. And I finally, you know, decided to follow my heart and my passion, and that was service of others, public service. But I knew that that ship had kind of sailed in terms of enlisting. So it felt like it felt natural to consider first responder and firefighter, sure. EMS. That is something that really spoke to me. And, you know, I had the conversation with my dad. I said, look, I don't want you to be disappointed or upset, but I know you might see this as having thrown away a lot of money and time, but I really am being led to do this. And he said, that Josh, that's all I've ever wanted you to do, is be happy and pursue what, you know, and love what you do. And he said, I can totally see you excelling at that. So,
so how old are you at this moment?
Say again.
How old are you at this moment? So you're contemplating leaving the bar.
41. Okay. Almost 42. So okay. I enter rookie school just before my 42nd birthday.
First time ever exposed to the fire service.
First time, yeah. I knew on day one though that I was in love with it. I knew it was gonna best decision I'd ever made. And I had the great experience of being hired by the city of Valdosta, Georgia. They had a great in-house program. They put me through rookie school, fire one, fire two, you know, hazmat, EMT, B. They were big on education, and they set us up for success. And I knew that I wanted to, that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And I didn't want to just be, and I could see early on, like, what career path I wanted to take in the fire service. You know what I mean? And I gravitated towards the meat eaters, the guys that have a passion for it, because I took it seriously. The oath that we took, you know,
right.
This is literally life or death, whether it's, you know, a patient or victim or the guys and gals that we're going in to that scene with, lives are on the line. And I think a lot of people take that for granted.
I agree.
But so that's a very abridged version of of my life. So
man, it's a lot, brother. There's a lot of parallels you and I do share in our backgrounds coming to sobriety. I love how you said that sobriety, there's a lot of people, they don't turn to an addiction until it's almost too late, or the wake up call, throwing their, say it's life throwing them the universe, but it's God. Look, we know it's him trying to get our attention to spare us from, if you will. And he does not give up on
Unbeliever,
harshly. Go ahead, brother.
Oh no, I was agreeing with you, man. Like, God has always been constant and there. Like, if I ever walked, it was always me that would walk away or turn my back. But when I turned back to him, he was always there waiting. And that was all I was gonna say.
Yeah, no, it's very true about him and his character and who he is, especially when you introduction, paraphrasing nicely, to religion per se, and then you stop pursuing a specific religion branch and you just pursue the Father. You build that's that relationship. And that's where I think a lot of people have that misunderstanding that or Pentecostal or Catholic, it's a religion. There are denominations, yes, but it is a relationship you have with your Creator, and it's intimate. And the more acceptance into your life, and you know this, but for those that aren't just getting it just yet or was at a crossroads like you were, pursue God. He will tell you where to go. He will lay it on your heart. He'll play songs at the right time. He'll send that random stranger at the right time. He will send himself through other vessels or songs, shows something that just instantly just gives you goosebumps and just breaks you down and cries. Those are God moments. And
those are God moments. And I've got to be receptive to that, though. And I can't be receptive to that if I'm dulled, you know what I mean? If I'm dulling my senses or putting crap in my body, that separates me from God, and I'm not able to see or hear him when he's trying to communicate with me. So, and I'm 100% in agreement with you, like denominations, all that religiosity, it's just religion and that's man-made. So it's just my personal opinion that it's flawed, inherently flawed, because it's of man. Whereas, you know, your relationship with Christ, your relationship with God is personal, and no one really can tell you or define how your relationship should be with him. It's going to be personal and individual. So.
Right. And he speaks the rest through the Bible, which is his word. It's everlasting. And
yes,
when you do finally, so what was that like for you? You've noticed that your alcohol addiction was bigger than anything you can tackle. And you knew that you needed God's help, but you were still reserved because of your past experiences. What was that moment like for you where you just finally surrendered to him?
It was a moment of really just relief. I took a deep breath, like, okay, I get it. Like, I'm done. I'm done fighting. I'm done running. Like, it can't be any worse than this.
Right.
And, you know, and I felt that immediate comfort. Like, I'm here and I've got this. Now it still requires action on my part, but I knew it was going to be all right. And
right. Because that's what I wanted to follow up with, was the actions. Because that is the first action, is understanding that you can't do this alone. And it may not be an alcohol addiction for some. It could be some sort of just overbearing pressure that you try to run away from or numb the pain from, and you're still just a prisoner to it. And it's ultimately being a prisoner of our sin. And
that's right.
It's finally realizing that I can't do this anymore, or it's going to end up taking my life. And ultimately, that's exactly where those roads will lead to.
And so, I mean, I look at it in terms of manageability in my life, and that can be subjective to anybody. Like,
sure, I like that.
Unmanageable. So,
And
all I can do is just share my experience. I can't tell anyone what to do. All I can do is just share, you know, what my life looked like and what I did and what it looks like now.
Amen to that. So what was next? You told him you needed his help, and then you said it required actions. So what actions in your life were you taking?
I had experience with AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just kind of gone through the motions for a lot of that time because I wasn't really serious about surrendering to it and giving up the alcohol at the time. But I knew I had still made a connection with a sponsor, one of my close friends to this day. He's still my sponsor. So I knew what actions I had to take. I knew that I had to follow through. I actually went into a sober living house for a short period of time just to have some extra accountability. And then I started working the steps with my sponsor and going to church, doing the things that I knew we're going to keep me from drinking.
That's right.
And now that I've, you know, and I still go through the steps with my sponsor from time to time. If, you know, something comes up in my life that's troubling me. And, but what's important is that I'm available to others. And it doesn't have to exclusively be AA related. It's just, I have to be of service. Again, I feel like I lived such a selfish life for so long that my life isn't mine to be selfish with anymore.
I can 100% agree with you on that. I relate. Absolutely. Yeah. Did you have any reservations seeking out AA? I'm asking because it does kind of have a negative taboo to a lot of type A dudes that know they have a problem, but man, I just don't want to be the guy that goes to AA. You know,
So I'll tell you, I may be oversharing some, but anyway, my initial interviews with Valdosta, you know, went well. I tested well and everything. The CPAT and all that killed it, but I was initially a no. And I knew that there was a old article about me when I was a lawyer and I was drinking that was still online, lingering online. Nobody look that up, please. That when I mentioned or alluded to the fact that I was starting to have consequences as a result of drinking, that was one of those consequences. Nothing came of it ultimately, but it was still out there and it was embarrassing. And I think that was a reason to give the city pause. So I sat down, or I asked for a meeting with the chief, and I said, hey, I think I know why I was a no. Can I just talk to you about it? And he said, sure. So I went into the office and I told him that I was an AA and I'd been sober for a couple of years at that time. And that here, this is what I do to ensure that I'm never going to be that, or that I'm not that person again. And if you take a chance on me, you know, maybe I can be a benefit to the organization. And he agreed. He was like, look, I think this was a, he was like, it was a good call setting up this conversation. He said, I think that there is a stigma in the fire service and that you could be a help to, you know, helpful to me, you guys that need need help, but are, you know, fearful of taking that step. So I made it a point to be not very vocal, but to not hide it and to let people know.
Right.
In recovery, I'm an AA. And if you want to talk about it, I'm here to talk. And I've had guys approach me here and there. And initially when I first had exposure to AA, I was hesitant just because, again, it was my mindset. I wasn't fully convinced that I hadn't fully accepted the problem. And I hadn't accepted that it was outside of my control. So I would go to the occasional meeting and I would find differences. Or I would pick everybody apart. Like, well, I'm not like that person. Or, you know, that guy's bullshit, or he's weak, or this, that, and the other. But now when I go to a meeting, I was just at a meeting earlier today, I go with an open mind and open heart. And I'm like, I can identify with just about anybody, something that they say, because it's all in my perspective. So I just say to anyone who might be hesitant, you know, give it a shot. Again, you know, I know that it may not be for everybody, but it's not going to be any worse than where somebody might be at that moment, if that makes sense. So
it does. There's a lot that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's just a lot that live in like a concealed hell and they think they've got it managed and under control, but yeah. Everyone around them sees the impact that it's having in their lives. And yeah. They just don't fully receive the help for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I get it, man. It's hard to ask for help. It's hard to, again, it goes back to what I was telling you earlier, like that. It's almost, some people think it's an admission of weakness and, you know, you got a bunch of alpha dudes that they can't openly acknowledge something that they view as a weakness. So I get it.
Right. But. No, I'm very proud of you, man, for continuing to stay the course. I'm coming up on a year of sobriety myself.
That's awesome, brother.
It's like I shared on a couple different platforms. It's been an off and on battle. And usually when I'd have a big life setback, that was the first thing I'd run to. Now I run to Christ and I don't even think twice about it, you know? And like you said, you can see, but I no longer see the ones that I know have true problems with it, but they think it's okay because they're in a group of others that glorify just drinking alcohol. I'm going to call it for what it is. You get sad. You get sad for them because, you know, how many times you've been at the firehouse and you heard, man, I just can't wait to go home and have a cold one. Or you go to a conference to learn skill sets and something to save a life. But after the first day of lecture, everyone wants to get plastered and then they're hungover and not at 100% when it, you know, it's like, man, what are we doing here, guys? And it just becomes sad. You know, here we are trying to put our lives on the line to save others. And how many countless drunk driving wrecks and fatalities we ran on, but the second we clock out, we go to the liquor store somewhere else and we open up that bottle as we're leaving, or we leave a bar and we're no better than the ones that just took that life. Yet, you know, we want to get mad at them, but it's okay if we do it because I got under control. I'm a fireman, you know, it's getting shameful to an extent.
Yeah, and there's definitely a level of hypocrisy that goes along with that. It's definitely hard to accept. But I get it. I was that person once as well. So
me too. I can speak.
But yeah, you're right. And it's lonely at times. Like when I go to the classes and conferences, because guys will ask me to go out for drinks and stuff. I said, well, I don't really drink. But that was one thing that I struggled with initially. I became almost fear-based because I was afraid of putting myself in those, situations, that over time it would desensitize me to it and my guard would lower somehow. But, with more time sober, it's gotten easier. So I try not to be antisocial, and I definitely try to, because I want to make those connections and build those relationships, it's important to me.
And I do too. I struggle with the same things. I do too. And my pastor, he's 30 years old. He hit his sobriety and his salvation post college. So he was still very new to it all, but similar stories, just was abusive with it, but then learned he had a greater calling, and he dropped everything and went right into the seminary to become a pastor to help steer others away from it. And that's just another God moment, me clicking up and being a part of his church. We've had those one-on-one intimate talks, but he said it best. He said, how can you preach to someone about Jesus in a bar? How can you tell someone on a car ride about the love of God for you while you have explicit rap playing in the background? It just went back to your testimony and truly living up to it. And that's where it's gotten easier for me to say no to different things.
Right.
If you want to go to a restaurant or whatnot, that's fine. You're your own person. That's fine to order what you want or what have you, but a dive bar, if that makes sense, to have a social night out with my boys. Yeah,
that's right.
That's just not for me. And I'm not even going to talk about the financial strain. I mean, I guess we can touch on it, but you think about that too. I'm a sole provider for a family of seven on a fireman's salary. And I've already got one vice of tobacco that I'm off and on with. But then you want to add the financial addiction that it costs to keep alcoholism alive in your life. I'm robbing from them. Like you said, it does rob you of a multitude of things.
Yeah.
I'm just proud of you for staying the course, man, and going through that and just letting others know that it's not a bad thing to go seek out the help, man. It's actually more assigned to your character. And
I think it takes more strength to accept weakness. I know it's dichotomous to say, but that's my opinion. And I still struggle with self-sabotage, if that makes sense. Like, I think that I've always dealt with some level, like a feeling of being less than. And I think that leads to self-sabotory tendencies. Mm-hmm. So, leading up to, I'll give you an example. I was accepted to Georgia Smoke Diver last year, one of the October, November class. And I think I let fear impact my training. I eased up instead of picked it up, picking it up going into it.
Right.
And I was taking extra testosterone and things like that, and I was trying to find almost like cheat, if that makes sense. Like
some kind of edge.
Some kind of edge, yeah, because, I'm listening to these lies. Like, you're old. You're 44, 45, right, whatever, going into this. And this is a young man's game. Like, you're not going to be able to do that. And I got into my own head, and I think I was defeated before we even started because I, again, self-sabotage. I listened to that little voice, that little BS voice in my head.
But, that's right. And I think, go ahead. Like Matt McGee, Marcos Orozco, John Sparra, the three that I can think of that are in their 40s right now, and they're completing it and doing it. That gives hope.
It does, for sure. It's how you take care of yourself.
Oh, me too, brother. Yeah. They're a big act of inspiration. Again, I'm a little over a few years into the service now. I'm about to be 37 in April myself, and you might look at me and laugh and say, you're still young as all get out. But where I'm at, the current average age of my department is early to mid-20s with little life experience. Mm-hmm. And so you see that kind of dynamic into things. And here you are, 41, 42, that just got into the fire service. What was that age gap like on your end with, you know?
Yeah, I was definitely the oldest guy in my recruit class, but I got nicknamed Grandpa. But it was a point of pride at a certain point, though. I looked all in the eyes and I said, I'm going to beat you all on PT and probably grades too. So it was a great, friendly competition. I loved the guys that I came up with, but, when I went online, I was definitely at close to the age of my commanding officers, if not older than everyone. Sure. But it didn't matter. I still know I respect the position. I'll always show respect for the rank, not the I don't care how old you are. And I don't know if that's a generational thing. I see a lot less of respect of command these days.
It's a lot of negative entitlement. I'll say it. A positive entitlement. There's a negative entitlement. But around here, it's a quick capture to look at me. I'm young and doing this. And it's more negative, I believe.
That's right. I mean, I'm always going to be respectful of people, but I'm also always going to base my opinion and treatment of you based on your character and how you conduct yourself. But.
So you said you gravitated towards the meat eaters. What made you want to do that?
Yeah. That's just, I've always been that way though. Been into CrossFit and athletics all my life and, part owner of a CrossFit gym back in Valdosta. Competitive mentality is just part of me. And so I'm going to naturally gravitate to the similarly minded guys. But when I got online, it was those guys who I could tell were passionate and took the job seriously. And I felt like, we could pour into each other, sort of like the iron sharpens iron perspective. And guys like Ricky Garcia, he was my sergeant for several years. We just held each other accountable. There was a higher standard that we held each other to because we recognized that this is a job that lives matter. Right. And, it's as simple as day one in recruit school. Can you do a push-up? Can you lift your own body weight off the ground? Okay, well, now we're going to put 75, 80 pounds of gear on you. Try to do it there.
Right.
Okay, now you're going to have to pull somebody else who weighs, 200 plus pounds out of a situation. Those are questions that I thought about very early on. And I promised myself that I would never put myself in the position where I could be a liability. Like you said, Marco, are you an asset or are you a liability?
Right.
And that I ask myself that every day. So
I think you have to.
I think you have to, but I don't think enough people do. So, again, it's the people, you can tell the people who do ask themselves that question. And hold themselves accountable to a higher standard. And those are just the people that I naturally gravitate toward. So,
You talk about the standards and stuff.
Yeah. And it was, you know, no, your group.
Just you're, agreeing with you. And,
I'll
you
be know, honest. Well, I was just going to say is like your group, the Uncommon Firm, and I was so fortunate and grateful to have been put in contact with you guys. That community means the world to me. And so I'm very grateful for you. And that's another reason why I'll go to these courses like Spartan, and you know, I'm going to reattempt Flames at the end of March. But it's just at a minimum, I'm meeting other similarly minded guys, and we're able to like fill our cups, you know what I mean? And because I may be at a station right now where I'm not exposed to the training or whatever that I want. Well, I always have that place to go, those places to go to and get that.
That's right. So. That's right. There's a lot of us lone grinders out there, and you might have the crew, a couple of shifts, and then it dwindles away, but you're the constant variable that's constantly doing it. And to your point, it does get very lonely. It does excite you when they either want to come out or you have a swing guy come over and they want to get a grinder in with you because they know that you've become known for those type of behaviors. And, you know, even talking with John Sparrow, when he said, you know, sometimes it may not just be the level of workouts you do, but, you know, you as the go-getter per se, I don't say jot down a level, but do one of their workouts and just build off of that and just consider that extra credit. Like, it's such a great mindset to have. And, you know, to your point, how many times do we see us where the lights are off and everyone's just in the recliners for about 12 hours or 16 hours, you know? And it's like, there's, what are we really doing for, one, the betterment of ourselves, but two, being prepared to honestly serve and go on a high tempo, high paced call, just like we're expected to, but none of our actions are showing that we're expecting it because we're just lounging around. We're low on a couch.
Yep. Worse than that.
I love hearing that from a man of your stature and age, that you still make that choice to do that.
I mean, I'm nobody important. I just love what I do. And I, like you said, man, it does excite me though when you get somebody else to buy in. And it isn't, you know, I know that some people probably have mixed feelings about what we do and, you know, the Uncommon Firm. And, but that I look at it as we post these workouts to it's not bragging or boasting. It's accountability. Like, hey guys, here's what I did today. And I can look at your post and I maybe was thinking about not working out, but I look at that and I'm like, oh, you know what? I got to put in my blood and sweat today. I got to pay the rent.
That's right.
And,
there's a lot that move in the shadows too. And I respect that 100%. That's one thing I've learned turn of the year. I've been seeing that theme kind of play over quite a bit personally in my life. Had a couple great solid mentors in this specific realm of arena, so to say, that just like, hey man, just take it easy on those and just really focus on yourselves. Don't worry about the obligation of trying to put a post out because you helped create the page. Just dial in, get it done, and then come back a changed, refined man. And so
that's right.
That's why you don't see a whole lot of my routines anymore, to be honest with you. And
no, I get it. I get it. And you know, I think similarly, especially after, you know, the unsuccessful attempt at Flames last go around.
You and I were both there. I got to finally hug your neck.
Yeah, man. I remember. I hope one day I get to see you again. But I take that as a, I don't know. I probably just listened to that negative talk of like, who the hell are you to post your workouts? You know, you just got your ass handed to you, or, you know, you failed essentially. But I have to put all that negative talk away. And like, it's not about that. It's not about the glory. It's not about, hey, look at me. It's about here's what we're doing, you know? And again, it might inspire somebody who wasn't going to work out, just like this conversation. It might encourage somebody to go check out a meeting or something, you know?
Absolutely. So. That's what it's about, man. When you have Christ in your life, and you are validated by the one true person that you need to be accepted by, you know, and when you understand that, the barking of the mutts, as a lot of the firefighters like to say, which I still love what Mo Baxter said, you got to love them anyways. And that, when I heard him say that, my first attempt ever at Flames, it resonated so well, because that was during a time frame of mine to where I was kind of on a tangent of, why are you not doing this? Like, kind of almost overly aggressive with accountability to several different individuals. And it was just, yes, it was driven out of love, but the approach was all wrong, you know, and I'll admit that. And then when you say, well, you still got to love them, they're still your brothers, that's where that mind shift changed. Like, you're right. But I've learned a lot through this process too. To what you're saying, I was more worried about other people's personas, other people's criticisms. And I would tell myself that it didn't matter. And I would halfway believe that until I would get hit with some kind of negative feedback. And I would see how much it really did impact me. And I was like, you still care about what others think. And then here I am now, 6 weeks on surgery recovery, and 5 days ago I got cleared to start into my daily life instead of a Stairmaster low intensity or an incline on a treadmill. And I've been jogging every day, and I've got my minimum set that I want, which kind of inspired the March challenge of the day. And I've been visiting that every day, and I forgot what it was like to truly be appreciative, to be able to put in work. Like, that's there's a lot that when they're injured or what have you, or they're on leave for this stuff, they just sit and wallow, and they gain so much weight, and they actually hurt their recovery process. And I know that not everyone's wired that way, but man, if you just had a stronger mindset and just told yourself, if I can at least walk down my neighborhood road stop sign and back and not feel pain, that's a victory. And then I'm going to try that again tomorrow. All right, now I'm going to take that curve, and I'm going to try a little further tomorrow. And it's not being stubborn or hard-headed, but it is – you're building yourself. You're rebuilding yourself.
You're rebuilding, right. And that's – yeah, I had shoulder reconstruction. I left shoulder last May, and that was the most – intense, significant surgery I've ever had in my life. And it was hard, because I've never listened to doctors, you know, post treatment, whatever. I've always been like, yeah, whatever, I got it, and things have always worked out. But this was serious. I was very scared that it was gonna change my fitness, you know, for the rest of my life, affect how I train. So I listened to the doctors. I paced myself. I didn't lift weights. I did a lot of running at the time. And I think since then, I've acquired unreasonable fears. I don't know if that makes sense or not. And so that's become a new,
I'm tracking with you. I understand.
Okay. So like, in my when I was getting back into working out, I would do a push-up and I'd have the slightest pain sensation, and I was like, oh shit, here we go, something. I just undid the surgery. So I've had to fight through that fear, and like you said, just kind of rebuild. I started at ground zero in a lot of ways, and I know that when I was at Flames that last time, they were showing us the over under box, and I had this paralyzing fear overcome me. Dude, I've been through over under box dozens of times. And, but I don't know. I just froze up. I think Logan was in there. You can ask him. But I was like, it took everything I had in me to I prayed for a second, and I just said, here we go. And it was just that pause, that fear. I was like, what the hell is that? It was just so weird. But it's just interesting, man. Life's funny. I don't know where I was going with that, but it's just,
I like it, because you're right, it is. It'll hit you at times, like the same thing, you know. Understandably, I was the first one to tell them it's not a stamp of badge to ever be proud of, but you're not supposed to be here. And I rang the bell.
I drove 11 hours to do that.
And drove 11 back. Mm-hmm. And come to find out, when I got home, though, my four-year-old son had a ruptured appendix that was about 18 hours ruptured at the time.
Bro, so I remember that. I went
right from a 12-hour drive from Georgia to Texas right into a hospital for straight. And
well, that was
Lord
a, that
knows.
Was for sure a God thing. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's all I was going to say is that Lord knows what would have happened if I was on a Saturday afternoon, you know, the time that I had to take my son. We were already admitted in the hospital, and my wife had to call the emergency contact number. And then I'd have to drive fatigued mentally and all that. It just, it absolutely was a God thing. It just, it wasn't my time. And I believe it was, Brother Bew that told me that sometimes the class and the number calls you. It's not you calling the class or the number. And
that's right.
I just found peace, and it just wasn't my time. It doesn't mean I'm done. You know, it doesn't mean that, okay, well, I did my two shots at it, not going again. No, that's right. Not finishing something you started. And
that's right. Again, unfinished business.
Yep.
It's absolutely that way too. And I have a lot more peace about it this time, let's go around. But
I learned something about myself, though, even in that brief moment. And that's one thing I really appreciate of everything they do is you learn something about yourself, whether it's through the process, 10 minutes, or through the full completion, you will come out a better person. And I'm very thankful that they have those to offer.
Same here, man. Old Brother Bew, man. I love that guy.
Yeah, I'm going to tell him a quick second in a positive manner. My first time in Georgia, we spoke very little online, know each other. And he would lure me on the hour every hour. Georgia. And how are you doing?
Yeah.
And then it's like 3:30 in the morning, and he still sent me. I'm coming up on Jackson, Mississippi. He said, please do me a favor, find a hotel. You didn't have any plans to do anything until Monday morning anyways. And that's a character statement of who that man is. And I know
Say,
like that. And it's that level of care. And that, if you want to.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
It's,
I was about to say that very thing. Is like I left that whole process because – I won't go with all the details of like. Eventually, we had to self select out because of it was entering into rhabdo. But during that process, I never once felt broken down or beat up by any of them. I felt nothing but love and support, even through the that negative part of it, and it just made me want it all the more. But. And that's what I love about the Spartan program too. Like it's all about building people up and encouraging guys to push through. So I don't know. And the community, like the one you started, I just got a lot of love for everybody. So
I appreciate that. It blows me away hearing how much that group has impacted a lot of. I'm nothing special either, man. I know God's given me a voice per se of what he can do to someone who just submits to his will. And I don't take that for granted, but it's definitely not a look at me thing. To, like you said, if I'm able to share a story to help someone out, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm going to encourage the crap out of you because I need it too. Yeah. And a lot of stuff I direct towards myself, that I can reflect back on. And it may happen to resonate with a lot of other people that appreciate it. So it's a win-win. But I'm just thankful that group has done so much for so many people. And it's cool to be those. Yeah, what did you say?
Oh, and it just goes back to you. You were open and willing, and God was able to use you, and it's done a lot of good for a lot of people. So
it's just like he's using you now too, man. He uses all of us that are just We put our yes on the table, and that's the true definition of that Isaiah 6:8, here am I, send me. It's not,
right.
Yeah, we like to put a little bravado behind it. We like to definitely parallel it to the fire service. Like, here am I, send me through that dark window. I get that, but there's so many more, you know, me and the guys I do Bible study with every now and then, they we say it's like an ultimate grab. Like, here, I send me to make that positive, long-lasting impact in that person's life. Not
a
10-second moment of fear to potentially do a life-saving technique. Like, we're talking for eternity. And that's where the real glory for the kingdom is at, in my opinion.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That's awesome.
Brother, I am curious, though.
Yeah.
The Spartans, and you completed that. What was that like for you? A candidate, and then now on the other side, and to help pour into that person that you once were that showed up that day.
Again, I look at it as I was given a gift, and that was a brotherhood of like-minded individuals who want to impart knowledge and make you the best firefighter that you can be, or at least inspire you to want to continue to train and learn and more and be the, you know, the best. Because again, these are lives matter, and our actions can directly impact other people's lives and our own. And so I see it as an obligation, really. You know, if I have the honor of joining any other organizations, I absolutely will go back to give back, because it is my obligation at that point. I've been given a gift. I've given a gift of brothers, like-minded brothers, and teachable, hungry minds, if that makes sense.
It does, man.
And
that ultimately goes back to the iron sharpens iron. But I love what we were once told. It's not a pleasant process. So
it's not.
Don't fret about that part.
Nothing. Hey, look, nothing like that's easy is worth having. You know what I mean? It's got to be earned. And there is growth and bonding through shared suffering. I totally get that. And I want to apply that in every aspect of my life. And I wish we could apply that more in rookie school. You know, I feel like there's kind of been a trend away from that, but I think that's where it needs to be hammered at home the most. It's the most critical when you're coming in and you're new to the career. Like, that seed needs to be planted early on. Like, complacency needs to be flushed out quickly, identified and cut out. But
yep. That's where the whole tone is set for those individuals' careers with that organization is at that moment.
And it's, exactly. And you have to look at it from a 1,000-foot view. Like, that one person's attitude is going to affect this sphere in their community, in their station, everywhere. And it's going to be positive or negative. So,
I absolutely agree. But brother, I had fun on a question I pitched out, so I want to carry this on. It's a complete shifting of gears here, but
yeah, man.
What was the last fire you were on, and how'd that go? What was the call? What was your role? I just want to talk a little fire talk before we wrap up. Mm-hmm. What was your last fire call like?
Nothing glamorous. It was a golf cart fire. But
that thing
burned to the ground. I mean, you know, I work on Tybee Island, which is right outside of Savannah on the coast. And it's definitely a vacation retirement community. So you got a lot of golf carts, a lot of EVs that are, and you know what those EV batteries are like. So that thing, we put water on it. And I was fairly new to that department. So I was the firefighter on it and pulled the bumper line and went after it, and that thing sparked up pretty good. So we just basically, I was just providing I'm having a brain fart. I was just trying to make sure that the trees and the trailer that was next to didn't catch fire. So the safety lines, essentially. But
good exposure protection.
Exposure protection. Thank you. My goodness, what's wrong with me? Sound like a damn novice. But and that was fun. And then I guess we had a hazmat call a couple of weeks ago. There was a 1,000-gallon propane tank at the campsites that had been overfilled, and it blew off when the sun rose. And so it blew the safety valve clean off, and then it knocked the shutoff valve off, or broke it because it just hadn't been well maintained. So that was a pretty interesting scenario.
I can imagine. So
again, I'm just a good old rookie, or you know, firefighter, man. I don't have any authority on scene. I just do what I'm told, and I love it.
That's what I'm talking about. That I love that position. I'm there, and Lord willing, I hope I get to stay in the back for a good while until I'm not physically able to. And it's not for lack of competency to promote or do this or that. I just legitimately love being a fireman. I love doing the job that a fireman has to do. It's the foundational ground level of the fire service. And I absolutely love it. And I'm sure we can go off on a big tangent on all that stuff, but you can still be just as impactful as a well-rounded tailboard as you can a company officer, in my opinion.
Absolutely. But I will say this. I love it too. And I do hope to be in a position to fight fire for as long as I can. But my girlfriend did tell me something one day when I was complaining about, you know, typical administrative stuff. And she said, you don't have the right to complain because you're able and capable of doing more, but you're choosing not to.
Yeah, she's got a point, doesn't she?
Yeah, I was like, dadgummit. Yeah.
She's got a point.
So I did go and, at least tried to step up. I asked what I could do to be more service and help. So, and that might materialize in something at some point down the line. But we'll see. Either way, if it's God's will, it's God's will. So
that's right. That's what it comes down to for sure. Everybody, you got any goals you're working on right now or working towards?
Well, I just started fire inspector. My hope is to investigation and ultimately go down the arson class.
Cool.
And that might take a minute. But I'm also hoping to, because I have my rope tech and hazmat tech certifications, I would really like to head up the special operations division or of my current department. I think that our department is uniquely positioned to be an elite fire department because we have a lot of assets available to us. And I think there's no reason why we can't be the, and we have, especially during the winter months, a lot of downtime. So there's no reason why we can't be one of the most highly trained departments in the area.
Absolutely.
And, training, it's all about training, man. And again, I just really, if it's God's will, I'm going to put in the work to reattempt flames at the end of March. And then after that, I think I owe Maggie some time to do what she wants to do.
Absolutely heard that. That's this was my year of restoration. I've told a few people. And
yeah, I remember you told me that.
Yeah, and then oddly enough, I got the 6 weeks of downtime. And then in May, my wife is giving birth again. And this is our final time we're having her surgery to shut the old baby factory down. And so I'll be looking at some short time leave again in May. And then it's just back on the grind. But it's the big rebuilding thing. And to your point, too, is great ambitions. And I know you can never be prepared enough to enter into such programs. But at the same time, you got to be real with yourself and how much work are you truly putting into it? And is your mind legitimately right for it? Are you mentally prepared to really go through all the unknowns that are going to be thrown at you throughout the whole duration of those programs? And the only way to do that is to legitimately put yourself in those freak out moments and regain composure. And then don't call it quits after that. You continue on. And that's part of my rebuilding process. So I'm there with you, man. I hope to see you again.
Definitely. I will see each other again. Absolutely. If it's not one of those, it's going to be at the Dagum convention or fire conference, because I am dead set on making it to one of them. Hopefully next year sometime. But I'm really looking forward to making my way out to Texas at some point. So
yeah, that'd be a good time too. I'm looking forward to this one as well, because it's all writ based, and I've grown to really, really love the writ aspect, because it encompasses all the fire skill sets, you know.
It sure does. Yep.
And that's kind of where I'm at in a position with my career too, is I gotta for all the disciplines of a tailboard, but I know Rob Ramirez said it and kind of made it more popularized, I guess, was being hard to kill. And controlling the controllable is something I'm really embracing a lot of. And, well, what can I control? I can't control the flashovers per se, but what can I control? That's knowledge-based, skill-set-based, physical preparedness, and mental state of readiness. What can I control? And so that's the big journey I'm on right now, is just absolutely controlling my controllables. Yeah. So we'll see where it goes.
Well, I know you'll get it done for sure, man. But I have the utmost respect for you, and I really enjoyed, you know, getting to talk to you and getting to know each other a little better. And I look forward to the future for sure.
No, absolutely, Josh. I appreciate it, man. It took a lot of courage to share your story. And I know
hopefully it wasn't too well. Hopefully it made sense. It wasn't too rambling or meandering, but
no, but you spoke life. You spoke what happened to you. You spoke what you realized that changed, and then you executed it with actions, and you're on that path. And I'm very proud of you for that. And I know that will resonate with someone that's tuning in listening, because we're all the same, in all honesty. Sure, we have our differences that makes us a unique individual, but when it comes to tackling life, we're tackling the same problems.
Okay.
So I just thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity too. So.
Oh, absolutely, buddy. Well, man, I appreciate it again, and I look forward to seeing you again, my man.
All right, take care. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too, buddy.
All right, bye.
See ya.